Welcome to episode 30 of Camthropod, the Cambridge Anthropology podcast, hosting episode 4 of Artery, a podcast on art, authorship and anthropology.
Welcome to Artery with Isa Kavejia, a podcast on art, authorship and anthropology. In each episode of this collaborative podcast, one anthropologist specializing in a particular cultural context has a conversation with an artist of their choosing, exploring issues of authorship and responsibility in art. In this episode, Alana Kant, a social anthropologist at the University of Reading, speaks with artist Jesus Guevara Rico. The conversation took place in Spanish, so you will hear it in English translation. I will hand over to Alana to introduce herself and her guest.
Hello, and welcome to all of our listeners to this series of podcasts about authorship. My name is Dr. Alana Kant, and I'm a social anthropologist at the University of Reading in England. My research is about aesthetics, art, and religious heritage in the state of Oaxaca in Mexico. And today I'm joined by a very interesting acquaintance and friend whom I met in Oaxaca. Jesus Guevara Rico is a painter, illustrator, tattoo artist, and art restorer and conservator, and that is how we met. Today we are going to talk about the different currents of art in the life of Jesus and his reflections on creation and authorship. Welcome, Jesus. Well, I want to start at the beginning because I'm curious to know how one comes to be an art conservator. Can you tell us about when you started making art and perhaps how this led you to study and then practice art conservation?
Oh, yes, well, we have to start a little back to understand where I am from at the time until I studied at the university. Well, I am from Jalisco, originally from a small town about 2 hours from the capital city. And while there, at some point, there were cultural workshops run by the municipality, is where they taught the women and young people to paint. They were generally limited to practical things like napkins to serve tortillas, napkin rings, and decorative things. However, this was never enough. Like, at some point, the teaching became very basic. Then curiosity led me to other sites to learn and develop. This way, I got to know a teacher at the high school I attended. She taught me my first semester, that is, I had classes with her from the beginning right through until the end of high school. And it was then, at the end of high school, when my curiosity was born and I wanted to see what I could study. I was between chemical pharmacology, very strange, and this, the visual arts, two poles that are very far from apart. From exact sciences to artistic sciences, you know. Then I did not find exactly what I wanted to study until a teacher invited me to an exhibition of his in La Moreña Museum in La Barca. It is on the border between Jalisco and Michoacán. And we went to that place. Suddenly I arrived and saw the beautiful house, full of mural paintings all around, some scaffolding with a little person up there painting, and it caught my attention. I approached her and asked her what she was doing, and she starts explaining to me that she doesn't paint, that she is restoring, and this started a curiosity in me. And then she tells me a little bit about the career, a little about the university. And she tells me that this is like an intermediate between art and science, where they teach you how to paint on historical works without going too deep, etc. At the same time, they teach you how two materials work, how they change through time, how you have to control a little bit for the aging of the elements in a piece, etc. So at that point, I said, well, this is what I want. I mean, half between the two situations which I find myself, art and science. And this is where art conservation and restoration come in. since they are mediation between the two. And I went to university too. Although they didn't teach me composition or anything else about artistic work, they teach me about the technical factors, how a work of art is made, from how to stretch a canvas, how to make a best preparation, how the pigments are made, how they are mixed and everything. This is all part of what I learned. And then little by little, I started playing between painting and restoration. And that's about as far as I has get. And from then on, I started thinking about making more pictorial creations during my career and up to the present day.
Oh, it's really interesting how you say that art conservation and restoration has sort of allowed you to connect these two sides of your personality. Something else that I find really interesting is the way that location seems to matter to artists. Now, you say you're originally from Jalisco, but now you live in Oaxaca. Do you think Oaxaca is still important for artists in Mexico today? And why is that?
Sí, claro, por supuesto.
Yes, of course. I think if we go back a little bit to the beginnings of the European art movement, or go back to the beginnings of Novohispano art, where we see incredible, very Baroque jewels of art. For example, if I am not mistaken, here in Oaxaca was Cabrera, one of the most famous Novohispano painters, who had a very polished technique. And then also other artists came to bring their work here. So you start to see a very rich Baroque, very decorated style of art here. There are still many of these jewels in Oaxaca. These places still exist. There are still these places. We can appreciate the art without it ever having been touched, restored, or anything else, as if it has been left to rest. Well, later on, you start to see the resurgence of art with Rodolfo Morales, a very important muralist who also painted on easels and movable things. And now, with the unfortunate passing of Francisco Toledo, Oaxaca is positioned in a very important place within contemporary art, precisely because of Toledo. He left as a school of or context of art so important in Oaxaca. I believe that it is an important place right now in Oaxaca and for all the art of Mexico. And we can hope that the students or those who have been in the school of Oaxacan art continue to revolutionize what they do not remain only in the traditionalism that Toledo was doing. That is to say that he made very important traditionalist art, but that he revolutionized it with new techniques, with new experiments in visual art, new styles, or even the recreation of styles.
Yes, I can really see how the place of Oaxaca has really influenced so many different artists and that community of artists continues to influence people like yourself today. Can you tell us what sorts of things you're working on right now, both in terms of art conservation and also in your wider work? What are you doing artistically, Jesus?
Primero, dentro de la...
First, within conservation, as such, I am a great lover of Novohispano art. I like it a lot, eh? I like to work a lot with it, especially the sculptures. Right now, I am working on a chapel with mural paintings as well. But at the same time, I have been working with some passion crosses from some towns here in Oaxaca. They are from a place called El Rincón Zapoteco, and they belong to some chapels that are like border sites within different towns. They are from places of rest along the path, or places that you had to get to in order to ask for a blessing and permission to allow you to get to the other town. But now these places are no longer in use. New highways, new routes were created, and these have fallen into disuse. But it is important to preserve these sites and the identity of these places, because whether we like it or not, they are still there. For a moment, they were important, and it is necessary to rescue them in some way or another. And in recent years, people have started to pay attention to this. There was a big quake in Oaxaca in 2017, and he was in charge of salvaging the heritage that was destroyed as a result of the earthquake. That's what I have been doing for the past 3 years, and the work was, well, we are working on that. Basically, in terms of the visual art that I am creating, well, my art was very oriented toward Homo eroticism, right? But now I am with the idea of to grow a little and experiment a little more with visual arts. I am doing work that is like Oaxacan traditions, but taken a little bit like a touch of pop art, but also mixing some techniques that I like a lot from the Novo Hispano art. So like I am trying to make a mix there, where it is basically me, all my likes, all my, well, yes, I have been working with images or tiliches. I don't know if you know them. They are the dancers from Putla, the Guerrero. I am making a Oaxacan feeder dancer. I am kind of doing series of it, like emblematic pieces of the Oaxacan traditions. Hopefully, it will continue to grow, and that's what I'm working at the moment.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. It sounds very interesting as a project. Okay, so how do you see the relationship between these different practices then? Do you think that the creation of art is very different from your conservation work, or is it more of a combined practice for you?
Por supuesto, es una práctica combinada.
Of course, it is a combined practice. I think, unfortunately, a lot of times, or perhaps with also intention, the contemporary artist does not worry about the future of his pieces. That is, he does not worry about what is going to happen in time. Generally, we use materials that we do not know the composition of, so we also do not know how they will deteriorate over the years. And the passage of time always leads to the deterioration of the pieces. If we do not know very well the materials that make up our work, then we don't know what will happen, because at some point, time is going to take its toll. So it is ignorance about the pieces. Maybe many times the artist has that intention, but sometimes not. For example, now many works that were created in the 17th century are having consequences of the authors. For example, the paintwork is becoming transparent, so that they look like ones that are much older. At the time, they never thought about it. Now, well, I can sort of use that to my advantage, I think. Okay, I'm going to put this almost transparent layer that will, with the passing of time, will reveal about another face or perspective. It will give a transparency. I will then, that works for me, because I have the knowledge of how to create layers and to choose the right pigments for this. And this serves me to create new things. So I think they are extremely, very closely related. Right now, I am only now doing easel painting. So I am more focused on easel painting, either on wood or on canvas. So I am going to see how it's going to happen, how it's going to reiterate, how can I use this work for me and not against me?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I'd like to ask you something about authorship. When you work on the conservation of an old piece, I wonder if maybe you put something of yourself into it too. But there was an original author that created the piece in the first place. Could you tell us how you have negotiated this question or problem in a project?
Sí, bueno.
Yeah, well, it depends. It depends a lot on the piece and the context. Look, generally, when we work for museums, the restorer is limited to only making the piece stable, and you don't create more. You don't paint more. You leave it as you find it. Maybe you use a neutral tone to replace an area that is missing and to settle the paint in its place. But if it needs a face, or maybe it needs a hand, you usually don't paint it. However, when you work in a village where the religious figures are deeply meaningful for them, the pieces have to be complete because to chop off a hand in a village implies many things. They ask, why doesn't it have a hand? Why doesn't it have a face? Did something happen there? It's a phenomenon or something? Many things can start to be created in this type of talk. So in the village is where this question about creating an authorship can come in. You don't quite put yourself in, but you base your decisions in other works that you know or that are in the same context. For example, Novohispano art is generally based on engravings from Spain. So there is something that came before that will help you to complement your work on a piece. But you have to be very limited. I try not to create something that isn't there. So I don't put it in my own eyes. I don't put it in my own mouth. I don't put it in my nose. Because there are many people who do this. Well, it's not very normal, but it's also common. So I try not to do that. And what we generally do to differentiate the original work from our work is we use pointillism techniques. That is, everything that we do, we create through little dots or through lines or things that are identifiable at a very close view. When you see it from afar, you don't notice it. But when you see it up close, you can see that my work is the intervention. And the original is clearly another's work. It's something else.
And if I understand correctly, this is so if another restorer in the future comes to see the piece, that they know which part you worked on and which part was by the original artist?
Así es. La idea también es esa.
That's right. That's the idea too. If at some point a historian comes and sees the piece, they're going to say, okay, this is the intervention and this is the original, which I'm going to direct my attention to is original. I mean, I know that the piece is already complete. I know that the restorer has already completed it, but whatever I limit myself to, then it's also a bit like that. As historians know my little dots and lines, they know these are not the original ones. They are something that I did. But for the normal people, the people who have their religious aversions, for them, it's like, oh yes, it's complete. Thank you for making it so beautiful.
Yes. This makes sense. And when you were working on these pieces, do you think about the individual artist who made the piece in the first place? I know it's almost impossible to know his name or even his identity, but do you ever think about this person?
Pues, no pienso.
Well, I don't about the person of if I do. Generally, with this kind of art, if it's not signed. So it's very unlikely that I think of someone in particular. If I do not think about them, I think about how they created this object, more about who did it. This is because of the baggage at the university, but it tells us to think mostly about how it is built rather than who built it. I wish one day I could work on a piece by a famous artist or something. That could be incredible. I mean, I learn a lot that way. In fact, artists do of school paint in addition to restoring, we pay a lot of attention to how the original art is great. So we try sometimes to replicate the same thing. But no, I haven't had a chance to work on something by anyone famous. I just think of how they created it, not who created it.
So it's perhaps more of an abstract idea of an artist that lived in the past rather than an individual person? It's nothing more?
Yes, the only thing I can think of is how it used to be divided between guilds, between painters' guilds, sculptors' guilds, carvers' guilds. Today, I can think the same way that here are five people who could have participated in making this, or six or seven others in the techniques. I can see, has in the hand or the painter, you say, there are many hands. In other words, the person who painted this is not the same as the person who painted that. Perhaps in this piece or in this part, it could have been a pupil, or perhaps in this one, which is more expert. I could have been the master. It could have been the master. In other words, yes, it's more like that. You start to think about the guilt, but not the person. Not so much who did this, but what role did they play, you know?
Yes, I understand. Okay, so changing direction a little then. Have you ever worked collaboratively on any art projects with other people now? And how did this experience compare with your individual work and maybe also with your conservation work? Like if you worked with other people on a larger, broader or bigger project?
In
contemporary art, I have not participated like this, making a work among many. I haven't, and it's a bit difficult, not impossible, but I have worked doing street art, painting on the ground. But in this case, I have my own work and others have their work. However, we work in a collective to create many works at the same time. The experience is nice. It's very good because you share with colleagues who are passionate about what they're doing. The context is very different because you work on the street. The public are always asking. People are always questioning why you are painting on the street. Is it going to be erased? Is it going to go away? There's no point in putting it because no one is going to rescue it then. In collaboration has such, not only collectives, but each one with his own work. However, in restoration, it's almost a constant that you work with other people. That is always. Today, we are working in a chapel and we are more than 6 people, or maybe more. We are right now a group of almost 11 spread out in different places between Las Cruces and the chapel. The groups in our restoration, as in buildings, are very large. Even in the restoration of the buildings I was working on because I had to work with masons, and they are always 10 or more. It is the same in restoration. It is very common that you have large numbers of people. And so, well, it's about companionship. As many of us already know each other, so we already know that our attitudes are like. What limits to have between each of them, right?
Ah, this actually leads us right to my next question, which is about responsibilities. Because I think responsibilities are different in different types of art, but they're also different if you're the only one who's ever worked on a piece and so on. So my question is, what are your most important responsibilities as an art conservator?
As a restorer conservator, we're assigned various roles during the intervention. For example, at one point when I was working on the restoration of everything damaged in the earthquake, I was in charge of the area. So I was in charge of making sure that everything went well, of working with the community, I start to establish relationships with them to find out what they were looking for, what they wanted to happen with their pieces. This, and also to try come to middle ground between the restoration side, like all of our ethical terms and so on, and what they wanted. Because at the end of the day, we have to look for the best for the piece, and the best for the people, because they are the ones who get to keep them. They are the ones who will safeguard it. Maybe it will live, and many years they will come back, or maybe I will never see it again. So I need them to be okay with the things that I'm doing, and I need them to be okay with me as well. So in the question of administrating a project, I have to be very attentive to the materials, but also that the people are well, that the people eat and so on. No? More than anything, the responsibility is this.
And do you think there are any responsibilities in contemporary art that are similar? I understand that it's not the same type of responsibilities as in restoration or conservation, but perhaps there are still responsibilities in art making today. What do you think?
Creo que muchos artistas.
Yes, I think a lot of artists today are doing what they are doing out of a sense of responsibility. Well, it's always been like that, like raising your voice in protest or something like that. For there is still much to be done and many are already doing it. You know, this idea of closing yourself off, or of not pressing yourself as you really are, is collapsing now. It is. Well, now you can shoot out whatever you want with your visual arts. So people listen to you, listen to your opinion, or maybe listen to someone else's opinion. You can transmit it, you know. Now you have a responsibility more than just to oneself. Perhaps we can be true to ourselves, but we also have a responsibility to our context. And this is what a lot of people are doing, and it's very important because I think art has always served this purpose, because it is a place that people see and that people can recognize. The images speak volumes, and these platforms continue to function, and I think responsibility is really there all the time, and also responsibility for other people, because they might have another point of view. You can also become so responsible with that, what you said, that it can carry a bad message in a very simple way.
Mm-hmm, of course. Okay. So can you tell us a little bit more about the inspirations for your painting work? As you say, you have a lot of ideas from Novo Hispano art or the art from the colonial period in Mexico. But is there a religious connection for you in your art as well?
Sí, bueno.
Yes, well, there is an expression. A person can leave his ranch, but the ranch never leaves the person. I try to leave behind many of these ideas, but it's impossible because that's where I grew up. So I am still Catholic. My mother says when it suits me. So I keep taking ideas from there. I keep taking symbolisms that are not as typical as the Virgin Mary or something like that. Well, yes, I still take some references because they are the ones I grew up with. I think that everything you capture in art has a symbolism. The flowers have symbolism, and the position in which the person is saying, of if they are carrying something. And this comes from all the visual art I have seen from the New Spain. So I can use it because I study Christian iconography, but it's also in me since I was raised with the Catholic Church, Catholicism, and I know the meaning of many visual elements. I know if you have a sword disposition, it signifies something, or the heart in its usual place, or in the palm of the hand. I continue to take symbolisms. I continue to appropriate them, but not in a contemporary context, that is, even in expressions that are purely gay or erotic. So it's kind of my own, we can take it off. Either. So instead of disturbing me, I explode it because it becomes part of me in what I express him. And yes, that.
So we've been talking about your conservation work and its relationship with the colonial period in Mexico, or what was called New Spain. Can you perhaps tell us more about how your broader work relates more generally to Mexican history? Do you see Mexican history in your art, or perhaps even your art within Mexican history?
Ah, bueno. pues bien.
Oh, well, with my own visual art, from my own point of view, I don't feel that my work carries something extraordinary. I feel that many things have already been created, you see. Very few people are inventing new things. I am simply appropriating things that are already done, making them to my liking and expressing myself how I am. I think I am just being true to me. And if that serves to change something, that's wonderful. But it's not of my intention, really. Actually, if people are trying to change history a little bit, I hope at some point to be a referent of something. But it's not my intention at all. As for what I do as a restorator, well, maybe that's it. Those who did before their works have never thought they would transcend something. And now they are transcending time. Well, that's what I do as a conservator, is to rescue the identity of some places, especially the small villages, right? The patron saint isn't their main saint, because the town is named after the saint. If by any chance you destroy the saint, you destroy the entity of the town, that is, the town bears his name. So if you have to rescue him, you have to continue with the history of the village. And maybe that village will be important for the history of the municipality, for the history of Mexico, and so on. So I think that to conserve and restore implies this, that you are restoring and conserving the history no matter how minimal it is, because you always have information. For example, here with these crosses that we are restoring, and also the chapel, we have found a lot of gold leaf. We believe that these crosses and all this expression began in the early 19th century with a great influx of money, perhaps from a route that passed through here that no longer exists. However, we only found important art from that century, which leads us to think that in that period, they developed a pretty strong economy because they even used gold leaf techniques. They replicated French things. They brought pigments from overseas, expensive pigments. So it's kind of just made up a small of details, which is something like archaeology. It forms the story from a small fragments that are invisible, even to the eye. It's only until we restorers arrive and we investigate the materials, we do chemical tests, we begin to make conjectures, together with those of other professions, to begin to understand the importance of the species and of the site. Now it is no longer a place of great wealth, but at that time it was. Here it is an area of coffee plantations. Perhaps at the time it was also important because of the coffee plantations. So it's like we're making links little by little. That's why it's also important to restore all the pieces, to rescue this history and for the enjoyment of the people.
Yes, of course. That's really interesting. Thank you. Okay, so to finish off, my last question is about the politics of culture in Mexico today. I wonder if you can tell us what you think are the most important or pressing issues that are facing art conservators, restorers, and artists today in Mexico.
Well, principally, I think that all the time the resources for culture are being greatly reduced. This is what have been since I was an university until today. The National Institute of Anthropology and History is an organization of so much importance for the conservation of cultural heritage in Mexico. And each year it turns out of resources. Each year who work there are let go. Each year they earn less. In other words, now there is no way to go out of the villages to restore the artworks. There is no way to salvage many things anymore. Now they are relying more on private initiatives to contribute money than on those institutions that are supposed to be responsible for preserving the heritage of the people of Mexico. So all the time, we are facing difficult situations for the money more than anything else. There are also more and more limitations also on the artistic side. That is, there is very little support for artists now. Well, it seems that we artists have to work two or three jobs to be able to support for the artistic work. I have colleagues who only do paid work, I don't know, for a long period of time, and then focus only on the art later. Or they have a day job for paid for food and maintenance and quit art at night. That is, not perhaps from the beginning. It seems that one does not live from art, but one not lives in order to make art. But this is a thing that is often romanticized. It seems to me that the guilt of school itself can limit you to. I mean, if there is an artist who has become important, it's usually because a politician helped him. It seems to be that many artists who are excellent, but they have a hard time getting out. Then someone important rescues them, an important artist sees them, and then generally this important person uses them in their workshops to create work, and they award the credit to the important artists. Perhaps one day, this artist, in his own moment, will see the recognition more, and then he will begin to have a more important name within the painting and sculpture community. As I say, let's focus it on the visual arts. I don't know how things are doing in the areas of cinematography, music, etc. Well, yes, that's generally what we are up against. Also, in matters of restoration, the territorial problems between villages is a constant issue, which limits some of our work. They don't leave us alone to work. They only let us work at certain hours with certain restrictions. And then you also have to work as a mediator between people in order to be able to do your work. I know that this is becoming more complex and restoration is also becoming a type of social work. To rescue art, but also to help people to understand what they have to so that it will protect it. Yes, there are many problems that can be found. But it's mainly the economy and the fact that politics in Mexico is changing. It seems that now they are more open to other agents who often deteriorate the sites. For example, exploitation of important archaeological sites that are close to important places for tourism becomes simply the interest of private individuals. So they can devastate that. Or you can throw away or burn things that are important for knowledge. So it's a lot of problems, and each site has its own particularities. But in general, it's, I don't know, the political issues that are changing a lot. Now it seems that they are dismantling more and more the National Institute of Anthropology History, so that other agents can come in control of our heritage, which has been done before and has not worked. So let's see where all this stops. Because the Institute is like the other well-established organizations in other countries. If there is no Institute in charge, and it's only responsibility of private individuals, it will not work. Now, let's see what happens. Let's hope for the best.
Yes, I know it's been quite difficult there lately. And I suppose every country has these problems of how to find the resources for this kind of work. Because it seems that many people now think that if a site or a heritage location doesn't earn money, then it should not be supported. And this is obviously very difficult from the point of view of art and heritage conservation, since its social and historical value may not be the same as its touristic value or its economic value.
Yes, tourism. We know that many parts are fed by tourism, but they are also moving towards more modern tourism, that is. Perhaps the Pueblos Mágicos, those very picturesque villages that are promoted for tourism, invest a little more in their internal structures or in the art that they still have. But many times, tourism only focuses on the folkloric things, on what is beautiful, and not on the most essential parts, not it's the part that is identity. In other words, it seems that many times they repeat a pattern. Like, I don't know, there is something traditional here in this place and we are going to spread it until it gets tired. Instead of contributing new elements to the same people who live there, promoting the evolution of the people's own cultural practices for themselves. In other words, in the end, we are stagnating and we are only creating folklore through this type of tourism. And folklore is not everything in a culture. Then we will get pigeonholed into things that don't evolve. And what we have now came out of a process of evolution. In other words, it was not created out of nothing. So we are kind of worshipping the idea of traditional culture in some things. It is a point of view that we are not trying to give that push to the new young people, create new tendencies, new form of expression, so that culture and art continues to evolve and continues to create. This is from the point of view of artistic creation. On the side of conservation, at times the people don't even care about the archaeological site. They leave it to fall apart, or the church, where the maintenance should only be done by experts. So, in the end, yes, in this type of tourism, there is an idea of conservation, but only from that is comfortable, cheaper or in a way that continues to generate money. But they do not think about the next step. How much will it cost to repair an intervention that is badly done and will affect the building within 10 years? This is when what has been happening with buildings in Oaxaca, whose old walls are being filled with cement. Then, with earthquakes, all of the old and modern things fall apart. So you have nothing left. And that's when the entity deteriorates and the objects deteriorate. And it's like a vicious cycle.
Well, this is quite a serious issue, and I suppose we could talk a lot more in depth about it. But perhaps this is a good place to end our conversation. So I'd like to say thank you very much, Jesus, for the fascinating talk and the time that you've given us today.
No, gracias a ti. Y un placer.
No, thank you to you. And a pleasure to see you, listen to you, and talk with you. Hopefully, those who listen will have something more to think about. We must continue to create and conserve.
Thank you, and thank you to all of our listeners, and goodbye.
This was Artery with Isa Caveggia, a podcast on art, authorship and anthropology, supported by the UK Arts and Humanities Research Council. Hope to speak with you again soon.